Well, I did this transgressive thing this morning.
Uh-oh. Do tell. You just have the bottle?
In a brown paper bag. This is a transgressive thing, as I went to buy whiskey at like 9:30 in the morning.
That's awesome.
I felt mildly embarrassed. The woman was like, so how's your day going so far? And I was like, I guess it hasn't really started.
It's 9:30 and I'm buying booze. Like,
it's going great.
Yes, that's awesome. Do you want to tell everyone what you bought?
I bought Elijah Craig straight rye.
Yum.
Elijah Craig's one of these like sleeper whiskeys. I mean, the bourbon anyway. I've actually, I don't know if I've ever had the rye, but inflation, man.
Here we are.
Whiskey's a lot more expensive now, but it used to be one of those like actually less pricey ones that people didn't know so much about, but it's like a really good, a good house. Well, it used to be like a $25, $26. Now it's a $33, which is like the cheap ones.
You know, everything is.
Everything. Jesus. Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, I experienced that too. Cause you know what I got? I got the John Powers.
You got a pickleback?
I do. I have some really nice pickle juice sitting in the fridge.
You're not drinking it now though.
No, I'm going to drink this just to
You're not going to do a pickleback on the show.
No, I'm not going to do any pickleback shots right now. But this also was, you know, sort of in that range.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, it used to be $18-19.
Yep.
We sound old. I
know. Like, seriously, I remember when whiskey was $18 or $19. Anyway, cheers, cheers, cheers.
Cheers. Cheers. Happy Friday.
Uh-huh. Excellent. Mm. So we've been basically doing a series, I think, at this point on ways that employees can share in the success of a company, you know, small businesses in that context, right? So we talk first about sort of values and terminology around what that is. So that's incentives versus participation.
Caretaking,
for sure. Then we got into employee equity participation, right? So we talked about the why and the when that makes sense. And we talked about some boring stuff relating to how that actually works.
I don't think it's boring.
Well, yeah.
Highly technical and scintillating.
We also talked a little bit about employee equity versus employee bonuses or profits sharing, when we like to see it one way versus the other. And so today, we're mostly you, because I think you see this more upfront than I do. We're going to talk about the differences between performance bonuses and profit sharing.
Yes. I have a thesis.
Okay, let's hear the thesis.
This came out of probably multiple client sessions, but one specifically where I was talking to a client about this situation. Because my thesis is that in a small business environment, 50 employees or less, 100 employees or less, I do not think anybody should be doing performance-based bonusing. I was talking about this with Karina, actually, and she works for a large advertising agency, like 500-600 people in her firm. It's part of a larger conglomerate roll-up, big company. Lots of resources. They take pretty good care of their employees. Like, their benefits and stuff are pretty good. They do a bonus system. It's very structured, blah, blah, blah. I'm willing to concede that in a larger company, and, you know, I'm jumping ahead a little bit, but I'm not talking about large companies. Because Karina was like, well, wait, you're not going to give employees money. And I was like, no. Mm-hmm. No. I'm all about giving employees money. But instead, and I'll talk through why, I have bullet points.
Okay.
is that I think instead the company should be pivoting towards transparent profit distribution. And I think your pushback to me was these are the same thing.
Well, no. I mean, definitely in the big company context, I was thinking about that when we were preparing for this. Like those plans can look very much like the equity participation plans.
Yes.
The reason I push back on that is only that, you know, like anything, it depends. It depends on how they're structured, right? Because they could end up looking a lot the same, or they could end up looking different.
They can. But I think what I'm saying and what I'm going to talk through is the context and the structures of what they force you to do by these constructs are different, even though the mechanism is the same. You're just giving people more money.
You are.
It's like basically the functionally how it shakes out, like on a W-2, how it shakes out for your payroll is basically the same thing.
So let's back up for a second.
Yeah.
Let's just take a second and describe what you're talking about when you say performance bonus and what you're talking about when you're saying profit share.
So performance bonuses, and this is what it came out. This is why this rant came about, this particular client. I've been working with them on building their team out. So we've been doing a lot of hiring. They've been doing a lot of growth. And their first employee, I believe, they were saying, like, you know, so-and-so worked really hard this year, so I gave them a bonus, like, midway through the year. But now I've hired some more people, so now I'm trying to think of, like, how do I, you know, what's the bonus system I should, you know, should I give them all bonuses? They've all been working really hard. And I was like, well, wait, hold up. And this is where it came about. So the performance bonus, the way I'm going to define this, is a additional compensation as a reward for good hard work, going above and beyond, doing your job really well, having an impact on company success in a very individual way, things like that. And my issue with it is, I think the first one is that hard work and profit don't correlate. Your team can work really, really hard, can do a great kick-ass job, and you can have no money to bonus at the end of the year. Like, external factors, maybe you lost a big client, maybe there's a pandemic, maybe there's turmoil, you know, whatever. The hard work of your team is not the biggest impact and direct correlation about whether you have money to give out as a bonus or not.
And that's an issue because if you're holding that out as the caretaking or incentive for the employee, that's what they're looking to, and it might not happen.
Yeah. And there's a disconnect. So you can kind of set up a situation like this client did where they're like, so-and-so worked really hard, I gave her a bonus. And that sets up a kind of expectation and mechanism for employees where if their hard work is connected to getting paid more, it's not aligned with whether the company's going to actually be able to pay them or not. You can have a particular year where everybody actually worked even harder because things were harder. Like, there were a lot of challenges that year. And those challenges led to there not being enough profit and excess cash flow to bonus people. And so they've actually worked harder. And then, you know, that's been an inverse correlation to the ability to bonus. So it just sets up a, like, weird disconnect, I think.
Interesting. Yes. If that's where the expectation is on the employee's side, like, if I work hard, I'm going to get something.
That's an expectation you set or you don't. It's not really on the employees, I don't think.
I think you're saying that's sort of inherent in the performance bonus concept, right?
Yeah. So that's one. Two is, and this is a big one, this is a really an operational one, which is in founder, owner-led small businesses, I am going to posit that almost none of us are doing a good enough, clear enough, structured job around performance metrics to adequately be able to tie a cohesive bonus mechanism to those performance metrics. Which is another way of saying, like, you know, a lot of our firms, they're very personality driven because they're built around us. We don't have the operational capacity to run really well-structured performance metric systems where it's really clear to the employees what the expectations are, how they can impact those metrics, what that would mean for them to, like, hit a 5 instead of a 2, you know, like those kinds of things. And so when you set up a system like this, it ends up kind of like this client being really driven by the whims of the employer. Mm. And that's toxic to culture long term.
And so these bonuses look like they're discretion. I mean, they are discretionary, and
they are
then they look like they're arbitrary.
Yes. And so then you get in situations, again, I was talking to Karina about this. She worked at, we'll not name it. I sort of miss her working at this place for a little bit because it was like every day I would get the new worst boss train wreck story. But she worked at a place that had one of the most unbelievably toxic cultures I've ever heard of at one point. And they did this really wildly crazy toxic bonus thing where like they would literally take some employees to a special place.
What?
Like, we're going to go to the secret club kind of thing at the end of the year, and they would get presents and money and stuff like that. And then the other employees be left behind at the office.
That is weird.
And it made everybody feel like shit.
Yeah.
So like, don't do that. But but that brings me to sort of my other points, which often it's not transparent. Like when you're doing a system like that, it's not transparent. It's between leadership and the individual employees only. You're not talking about the collective mm-hmm. or the whole.
Mm-hmm.
It's very individualized.
Mm-hmm.
Individual performances, not collective success. And then the other thing, and this is sort of a like finance operation structural thing. Most folks, when they're doing this, are usually doing it at the end of the calendar year, like holidays, end of the year, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. The one tricky thing about that for some companies, especially like LLCs and pass-through entities, is that you haven't really fully figured out your taxes yet. You don't really know what your pool is yet. Maybe you haven't figured out your full tax bill. There's a little bit of stuff like that. It doesn't apply to everybody, but
right.
Some companies, you can get yourself in a little bit of hot water if you're giving out too much money at the end of the year.
But also, depending on when those bonuses are given, you could have even a timing issue between, you could end up making the bonuses in the subsequent year, right? And
yep.
I would assume then you would get your deduction in that year, but it's based on your profitability of the prior year.
Depends on your accounting. Yeah. But right. Yeah, there can be some futziness around that. So that's performance bonuses. Why I don't like them.
I get it. I'm just going to say one thing, though. So sometimes when I have these conversations with the business owners, they're like, but yeah, I want it to be discretion. Like, I want to be able to say what the criteria are, what the amount is, and kind of just because it's my company and just kind of not be tied down to any of this stuff.
That's fine. You just got to realize what that can do to your morale, to your employees' perceptions of things. Like, there's repercussions to that that you need to be really mindful of, if you care. Like, to Karina's company, I don't think her bosses really gave a shit about, like, the environment they were creating. Like, that's not... So,
yeah.
If you don't care about that stuff, do whatever the fuck you want.
Yeah, I mean, that's an extreme example of not giving a fuck.
So let me talk about profit distribution. And so what I mean by profit sharing and profit distribution is that you're calculating the full company's profitability in a given year. So after all the expenses have been paid, after taxes, you look at what your profit was for the year. And then some portion of that you allocate and redistribute back to employees. So it is taking the excess value that they participated in creating for the company
mm-hmm.
and giving a bunch of it back to them. It's about collective success. It's very much tied to the overall financial health of the company. Were we profitable this year? Again, hard work's not always correlated with profitability, but when you start to have to, you know, talk about profit distribution, you start to have to articulate what actually impacts profitability and collective success for the company. There's usually transparency, not necessarily around what any individual gets, but around what the pool is, how you make the calculations, what that looks like. You know, 40% of the pool is going to ownership, you know, people that are owners, 40% is going to team. That other 20%'s getting retained in the company as savings, rainy day fund, reinvestment, whatever. Some companies do like a solidarity redistribution or put some of it towards charity. Sometimes, you know, input from team, where that goes, things like that. Employees actually getting the money in their paychecks. That mechanism is not really any different than the bonus thing we were talking about. What's different is just the structure and context, what this kind of distribution is grounded within.
Okay. And so what about the sort of continuum of discretionary?
What do you make decisions about?
Well, I mean, you even if you're doing it this way, you know, you have to determine what portion of the profit is going to be in the pool, the 40-40-20 thing you were talking about, like what's the numbers? And then within the employee pool, you've determined who gets what percentage of that.
Yeah, right? Definitely. I think you can set it up like where those things can change year to year. You know, because sometimes there might be some years where you want to retain more of that profit within the company. Like maybe you know you're going to be in a big growth year and you want more cash on hand and retain more. Maybe there's some reason why the boss gets more money some year. I think that's fine. I think what, you know, you need to do is tell people why.
Yeah.
Like, what is that about? And then, you know, within the employee pool, I have templates for this that I work on with clients, and we devise what the kind of rubric is. And it's generally like, you know, you might have something that's about tenure. Like you get more shares the longer you're with the company. Some folks might do like a portion of it is equal. Like there's 25% of each employee's calculation that is the same amount of money for everybody. So sort of like a foundation anchor amount of the profit. You know, like Wanderwell, we've often had full-time or part-time employees, like a mix. So we'll have a calculation that kind of allocates based on how much are you actually working in the business? Are you part-time? Are you full-time? That kind of thing. Some folks will do one based on salary. My pushback on that is that you just want to think about whether that's overweighting seniority or like pay differences in a way that you might not be super helpful or aligned to what you want to be doing. And then there are some companies that have a performance basis. Again, those tend to be larger folks that have really clear structures and like a position within the company that is monitoring that and making it clear. For like the small folks we work with, I wouldn't include that.
I've had clients who've done it where they want the employees to actually feel like year to year to year that their share in the profits distribution looks like equity. So within the pool, everybody gets a certain number of units or shares, right? And that's like your share. And the pool might get bigger or smaller, and more employees might come in or out. So your number could get diluted or could change.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like locked in as a starting point. Like, here's what you have. You might get more from time to time. I guess the idea behind that is that it feels like you have this ownership thing.
Yeah. I think you could definitely do it that way. I mean, theoretically, more people come in. That means the business is growing. And that might lead to, hopefully, ideally leads to a larger profit pool. So it's not really diluting things much over time. Functionally, that can happen. But
yeah, you're right. Like, hopefully, that's just like any dilution that people consider that good dilution because we have more employees and we're bringing them in.
Exactly.
So I had one. This is a little side tangent on this, though.
Yeah.
Again, this was a very small company with only a handful of employees. I doubt it would work on a larger scale. But the owner wanted to empower the employees and actually make them feel like they were owners in the company. And so one of the ways he wanted to do that was to give them a decision making around these issues that we're talking about. So while he said, here's how much is going into the pool, he actually let the employees determine among themselves who got what within the pool.
Yeah. I think that can work really well if you have a team with a lot of trust and a high belonging index. Like people work really well together already.
Yeah, I thought it was cool.
Yeah.
Again, I don't think I couldn't see that working with a larger number of employees, but with this small group.
Maybe not. But and I also think you have to make sure, be really honest about your team's trust factor for that one.
Let's go back to your thesis.
Okay.
Okay. So now we sort of have a description of the two sides. Talk a little more about what you recommend and why. Why is profit distro better?
So I'll get a little bit political here. If you're not redistributing profit back to your employees, you're stealing from them. So there's that.
Yes.
I'm sure not everybody agrees with me on that front, but
right.
But like literally, functionally, profit is excess value. It's money that is being generated above the, you know, what you're paying people. You know, you don't give all of it back to the employees because there's other purposes for profit that are around like legit caretaking for the business.
Mm-hmm.
So a big part of it is like for me, morally, politically, mm-hmm. values aligned, they earned that. They made it. They contributed to that. So did you. You're a working owner, so you get to partake in that too. What I really like about it, though, in particular, is it opens up this dialogue around the mechanics of the business and what actually makes it run, what impacts success, like what are those factors that would lead to an increase in profitability. I think traditionally, often that can be kind of mysterious. Like, it's not something we talk about so much, or like, it feels like something, you know, in a lot of publicly traded companies, it's like a little bit of a dirty secret. Like, you don't want employees to think about that too hard because then they'd realize how much you're exploiting them. So this is really about like tying actual meaningful work of this team to what would increase profit or, you know, make the company work better or more successfully.
Okay. So in real life, like in Wanderwell and with clients, like how do these discussions go? Like, is this a presentation? Like, how does it work?
It's a good question. I think it really depends. Like, some folks do like an ongoing discussion around it. You know, this is about goal setting and kind of KPIs and like, where is the company headed? What impacts that? You know, so it might be around growth. Like, we add X number of more clients. It might be around efficiency or like improving quality of services or improving product or something like that. So there should be some like tangible, you know, businesses are repeatable processes that make money. So like what are the things that can be changed, the levers that would like impact this metric in particular? And you know, one of the things I do want to circle back and say really clearly is that I'm not letting anybody off the hook around performance management. Like this my saying that like you're not going to bonus people based on their performance is absolutely 100% not the same thing as saying you don't have to manage performance.
Right.
Like,
right.
No. Yes, like you absolutely do.
All right, good to get that out there. Yes.
And I think the other part of it, of this sort of thesis, is that in a small company, we don't have a lot of room for folks that aren't in the right position or right seat. Like if somebody's not doing a great job, if they're not in the right role for themselves, if they're not the right fit for your company, the way to deal with that is not by not giving them a bonus. It's by moving them out of your company.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, you do have to manage performance because the assumption here is that everybody is doing a good job. And that's not like perfection level job. It's like normal humans doing good work together. Yeah. There's nobody in a basement with their stapler collection in small business land that doesn't, you don't have room for that.
Yeah. If you could just go ahead and make sure you do that from now on, that would be great.
Right. And just because you're not using cash at the end of the year to tell somebody they did a good job or a bad job, like that doesn't mean you can't not tell them if they're doing a good job or a bad job.
You should be doing that all the time.
Yeah.
You should be doing that all the time.
the transparency thing is still a question for me. Like, you know, does that mean every employee gets the financial statements? Like, as a real practical thing, like, how does that play out?
Well, I think there's different degrees. So on the financial transparency front, there's certainly folks that move towards what's called open book management, which is usually like full financials, but non-individual compensation.
Okay.
That's sort of a final frontier that gets really tricky. And that's sort of an advanced move, I would say.
Yeah.
I mean, open book management's an advanced move because you need to build a lot of trust and financial literacy to be able to do that so that people understand how money moves through a business, basically. So that's sort of the far end of the spectrum, which is that open book management means that you would show all of employees a version of the P&L, a version of the balance sheet. They know what, you know, expenses are going out, what revenues are coming in. They can see the profit on there, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You don't just spring that on people one day. That's not a good move. I think in a lot of ways, it's really just you're sharing what does the profit pool look like, that number? How are you splitting up that pie? And then like kind of a narrative almost like, I mean, this is one of the roles of leaders is meaning making, like helping people understand context and bigger picture. It's like, what are the kinds of things that led to this number being the way it is? For instance, there's a few years ago, I think the only year that we were able to do a profit distro at Wanderwell since I've implemented this, it was a year everybody was working really hard because we did a lot, we grew a lot. We also had to rehire a lot. So we had a couple of folks that we had to exit due to pretty serious medical diagnoses. That was really hard. So we had some unexpected like rehires, and there's, you know, somebody we hired that was a bad fit, had to offboard them pretty quickly. So there's just a lot of extra unanticipated hiring that year. That's expensive. It also slows down growth plans and yada yada. But I could really point to, and like everybody lived through those hiring cycles. So, you know, we could have a conversation about like, this is what's happening. Like, I tend to start signaling towards the end of the year, like, this is what I think it's going to look like. So I think it works best if you're kind of talking through and letting people in on how are things going? Like, it's, you know, what is happening?
What are you thinking about in terms of alternatives if you actually don't have money to do the profits distributions?
So, like what I was just saying, make clear what collective or business factors impacted the financials. Maybe it was you had to like do a bunch of extra hiring. Maybe you lost some clients. Maybe there's the recession looming. You know, there's like, there can be external factors that are outside your control. And then there's internal factors that are things that you can impact. And so I think it's good to distinguish about those, like pandemic, global shutdown, major external factor that would impact profitability, you know, team struggles around like new technology you've implemented. That's an internal thing that you can improve on. Like, so I think just articulating kind of what are things the team can actually impact that are within the realm of control. You can think about and communicate if you're going to revisit it later. Mm-hmm. So maybe January timing sucks. Q1, not going to happen. But maybe the next 6 months actually are going to look better. And so, you know, this year you revisit in June or July. This is the discretionary stuff. It's like, you can make the rule up that in this particular year, you're going to look at a, you know, mid-year assessment and see if you want to do a distro then.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can pick up again January the following year and look at it again.
And then like alternatives that aren't really like there are other benefits potentially that people could get that aren't.
Yeah, I think don't give people gift cards.
Okay. Like, that's a good lesson.
I feel like that one never is actually what, yeah, like you're like, no, this $25 Starbucks is not actually.
That's not going to cut it, huh?
No. All right. Vacation and PTO is usually the big one. It doesn't really cost you anything to give people an extra week off. That's a really good one. Be like, we're not profitable this year, but we're going to take an all-team summer break.
That's cool.
We're going to shut the company down in August for a week.
That's doable. Yeah.
Yep.
Nice. So you mentioned something that was what I wanted to ask, because it's kind of like what I do at the end. And you were talking about having templates that you work with clients to do this stuff, because I have some as well, you know. And I guess what I was thinking, I wanted to talk to you about, is the extent to which a plan like this could be created into a form, you know, obviously with areas that you would adjust, right? But you could at least have a legal document that is the form versus, you know, like a lot of the things we were talking about are completely custom, right? It's just unique to the business, and there's a lot of areas of discretion. But I was glad to hear that you said that you have templates, because there are some standard, semi-standard ones that I've done that look like they're templates, you know, and if it could be created into like a legal document form, I mean, then we could add it to the, you know, it could be like a module, a ready set legal module, or it could be like a thing that could be made available to people.
Interesting. Mine's a spreadsheet. It's a 2-sheet spreadsheet template. And what it does is just walk you through the decision inflection points. You know, one of those sets of decisions is about like, what are your buckets, the sort of share buckets that impact an individual's distribution. So that's the like tenure, that's the how much did you work this year, like that kind of stuff. So the first layer is like figuring out what your how you're going to allocate shares to each employee. And then the sort of step up from that is, what does your larger pie framework look like? So how much is going to be retained in the company? How much is going to solidarity redistributions? How much is going to the team? You plug those numbers in, and then it's set up with formulas. So then it spits out what everybody's shares are. I have one template for that, and it's just customized to the particulars of every company every year.
Right. And so then when they do that, you end up with sort of the two key pieces of information that we need. How much is going into the pool and who's getting what within it, right? And then the legal document that actually is like the thing you would, if you wanted to hand to the employee and say, hey, we're instituting this plan, this is what it looks like, would...
Wait, why do you need a legal document about it?
You don't. You don't need a legal document, but... my experience is that when employers want to roll this out, you know, you want to make a splash with it a little, it's something new, right? It's like, hey, we're doing this really cool thing and it's good for everybody. So here's what it says. Like, here's the thing.
So we have it, like Wonderwall, we have it just in our employee handbook.
That's a legal document. It can live there.
That's true. That is, you're right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. but it also has, like, I have the history in there. So any team member can go in and look at, well, what have been the distributions the last, historically. Cool. And again, not everybody, I don't share individuals' distributions. This is like, what does the pool look like? How did, we do solidarity distributions. So like where those went, what amounts those were. Those kinds of things. So I think that's cool, record keeping, because you can kind of talk about, like, the year we didn't do it, I talk about what there's a little narrative around what happened that year and sort of what impacted it.
I like that. I mean, I really like that. And like I said, from the legal thing, it's like if you were going to grant employees equity, you would have a grant letter, you'd have some sort of agreement that dealt with all the legal stuff we talked about, you know, last time, right?
Yeah.
Again, it's a program that you're going to want to reserve the right to change at any time. It's not as like baked in as the equity stuff, but if you want to put something out there and give it to people, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, if anybody wants help with this stuff, reach out.
Yeah.
I love talking about this. Don't fling random amounts of money around for random reasons.
No, that's, good lesson.
That's the real lesson.
That's a good lesson.
Yeah. Cheers, John.
Cheers, Kate. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday. Thanks for listening to Whiskey Fridays. Whiskey Fridays is a collaboration between my friend and colleague, John Gerber, who you can find at unlawyer.com.
And my friend and colleague, Kate Tyson, who's at wanderwellconsulting.com.
If this episode resonated with you in any way, we'd love for you to share it with a friend.
And if you have any whiskey recommendations, please share those with us as well.
Music today, I am thrilled to say, is by my friend Billy Dufala.